Picture this. You're inbound to Painfield, Washington, scanning the pattern, and something catches your eye on final. It looks like a 747. The wings are right, the tail is right, but the fuselage. The fuselage looks like someone put a standard airliner in a microwave and held the button down. It's enormous, bloated, almost cartoonish in profile. The fuselage swelling out like a python that swallowed something it probably shouldn't have. Your first instinct might be to question your last flight physical. Your second instinct, if you've spent any time around Seattle's aviation scene, is to reach for your phone and start taking pictures. Because what you're actually looking at is one of the rarest, most purpose-built aircraft in commercial aviation. There are exactly four of them in existence. And without them, the Boeing 787 Dreamliner program simply doesn't function. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tower. This is ATIS. Today we're going deep on the Dreamlifter, officially the 747-400 large cargo freighter. And specifically, we're going to dig into a question that gets asked a lot by pilots when they first encounter this machine. How far can it actually fly without stopping to refuel? Because that answer has more operational nuance than the spec sheet suggests. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight, from first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Let's build some context first, because the Dreamlifter doesn't make sense unless you understand what problem it was built to solve. When Boeing launched the 787 Dreamliner program in the early 2000s, they made a decision that was either visionary or reckless, depending on who you ask and when you ask them. They decided to distribute the manufacturing of the aircraft across the globe. Radically so, rather than building major components in-house or sourcing locally, Boeing would tap specialized manufacturers in Japan, Italy, Kansas, and beyond, each building major structural sections, then fly those sections to Boeing's final assembly plants. Mitsubishi Heavy Industries in Nagoya, Japan, builds the wings of a wide-body commercial airliner, Alenia Aeronautica. Now Leonardo in Grottaglie, Italy, builds horizontal stabilizers and fuselage sections. Spirit Aerosystems in Wichita, Kansas, builds the nose section. Kawasaki Heavy Industries contributes fuselage panels and wing fixed trailing edge sections. Fuji Heavy Industries handles the center wing box. Vought Aircraft Industries, now part of Spirit Aerosystems, built rear fuselage sections. The global supply chain for a single aircraft is staggering, and all of those massive composite structures, wings that span nearly 200 feet tip to tip, fuselage sections 30 feet in diameter, tailplanes wide enough to block your driveway, all of it needs to converge at one of two final assembly lines. You cannot put a 787 wing in a cargo container. You cannot load it onto a ship in any reasonable time frame that supports modern production rates. So Boeing's engineers arrived at the only logical answer: build a special aircraft to carry the pieces. They started with four retired 747-400 airframes sourced from various carriers. The selection of the 400 variant was deliberate. It had the fuel capacity and range profile Boeing needed. Then, in an engineering effort that is breathtaking in its ambition, they essentially built an entirely new fuselage shell around the existing airframe. The wing structure, landing gear, engines, and cockpit remained largely 747. Everything in between was redesigned. The result is an aircraft with an interior cargo volume of approximately 65,000 cubic feet. Let that number sit for a moment. 65,000 cubic feet. That is roughly three times the internal volume of a standard 747 freighter configured for cargo. The fuselage cross-section is so large that you could theoretically fit an entire Airbus 320 inside the hold. Not comfortably, but you could get it in there. Loading that volume required a loading mechanism that had no real precedent in commercial aviation at that scale. The entire tail section of the Dreamlifter swings open on a hinge, 95 degrees to allow loading from the rear. There is no conventional cargo door. The aft fuselage rotates away from the aircraft centerline, and the cargo is loaded horizontally on a specialized loader truck that matches the height of the hold. A 787 wing assembly slides in from behind. The tail swings back, the aircraft closes itself up, and is ready for the next sector. It works. It works reliably, but it is one of the more extraordinary things you will ever see on an airport ramp. Now, range. The Dreamlifter has a published range of approximately 4,200 nautical miles at its cruise speed of roughly Mach 0.82, somewhere in the neighborhood of 470 knots true airspeed at altitude. That translates to 8 to 9 hours of flight time between fuel stops under standard conditions. Here's what you need to know about that number. 4,200 nautical miles sounds substantial, and for many of the Dreamlifter's routes, it is more than adequate. But the core mission of this aircraft requires it to cross the Pacific Ocean. The distance from Nagoya, Japan, where Mitsubishi builds the wings to Payne Field in Everett, Washington, is approximately 4,400 nautical miles. That is beyond the Dreamlifter's published range under normal conditions. Winds aloft, payload weight, temperature and altitude variations, and route deviations can all affect the actual range available on any given day. What this means operationally is that the Trans-Pacific leg from Japan to Washington frequently includes a fuel stop. Anchorage, Alaska is the most common waypoint. The Dreamlifter comes down, takes on fuel, and continues to Everett. Not a long stop, just enough to ensure the margin. This is worth understanding from a pilot's perspective because it illustrates something important about published range figures. The number on the spec sheet assumes certain conditions. In the real world, particularly on long overwater routes with fixed alternates and weather exposure, you want margin. You always want margin. The Dreamlifter's crews are not flying the edge of the envelope on every Trans-Pacific mission. They are flying intelligently within it, which sometimes means stopping in Anchorage. For comparison, a standard 747-400 freighter with comparable fuel loading has a published range of around 4,500 nautical miles. The Dreamlifter surrenders roughly 300 nautical miles of range compared to the airframe it was built from. That deficit is the direct aerodynamic cost of the bulbous fuselage modification. You are flying essentially a very large barn with wings, a barn with excellent engines and a proven airframe. But the drag penalty of that non-streamlined fuselage is real and measurable in every flight hour. The headline doesn't tell the whole story on this one. The Dreamlifter is not a short-range aircraft. It covers enormous distances continuously, as part of a supply chain that never really stops. But it is not capable of a single-leg Trans-Pacific crossing from Japan to Washington without some planning latitude, and the routing reflects that. The fuel figures involved are themselves remarkable. The Dreamlifter carries approximately 57,000 gallons of jet fuel at maximum fuel capacity, 57,000 gallons of jet fuel at maximum fuel capacity, 57,000 gallons at full climb and cruise burn rates. That fuel feeds four Pratt & Whitney 4000 series turbofan engines, the same proven power plants found on certain 747-400 variants in airline service. Boeing did not experiment with the propulsion system on the Dreamlifter. The engineering focus went into the fuselage modification and the loading mechanism. The engines are reliable known quantities. The burn rate on that fuel is accelerated by the aerodynamic penalties of the modified fuselage. This is not a fuel-efficient aircraft. It was never designed to be. It was designed to move very large things very quickly, and it does that exceptionally well. Fuel efficiency was a secondary consideration to the mission requirement. Now I want to talk about an incident that illustrates how specialized this aircraft's performance envelope really is. On November 20, 2013, a Dreamlifter operating under Evergreen International Airlines, which held the Atlas Air contract for Boeing at the time, was inbound to McConnell Air Force Base in Wichita, Kansas. McConnell has a runway over 12,000 feet, plenty of room for a heavy 747 variant. Routine mission, routine destination. The crew followed GPS guidance to the wrong airport. They landed instead at Colonel James Jabara Airport, which is also in the Wichita area, but is a general aviation field with a primary runway of just over 6,000 feet. The aircraft landed safely. Nobody was hurt. But the Dreamlifter was now sitting on a runway less than half the length of its intended destination. Getting it out took the better part of 12 hours. Boeing dispatched a specialized crew. The aircraft's fuel load had to be carefully managed, reducing weight to bring the departure performance within the envelope of a 6,000-foot runway. The calculations were meticulous. The Dreamlifter can operate from shorter runways when it's light, but this was an unplanned situation requiring methodical performance analysis before anyone would authorize a departure. The aircraft left the following morning without incident. The crew involved faced investigation and certification review. But the incident entered aviation lore as a vivid demonstration of something pilots know well. Knowing where you're going is not the same as verifying you've arrived there. It also underscores the performance nuance of this aircraft. The Dreamlifter is not limited to runways of 12,000 feet or more under all conditions. Weight matters enormously. Fuel state matters enormously. Temperature and altitude matter. A light Dreamlifter can use a remarkably modest runway. A heavy Dreamlifter needs space. The performance envelope is wide, but it requires pilots who understand exactly where in that envelope they're operating. The four Dreamlifters in the fleet, all currently operated by Atlas Air on behalf of Boeing, rotate continuously through the manufacturing network from Nagoya, from Grottaglie, from Charleston, where Spirit builds nose sections. The aircraft typically return to Everett or North Charleston for major maintenance intervals, and the fleet maintenance schedule has to account for the production schedule it supports. If a Dreamlifter goes down for extended maintenance at the wrong time, It creates scheduled pressure on the assembly line. There is no redundancy to speak of when you only have 4 aircraft in a category. The Dreamlifter fleet operates with a very different risk profile than a commercial airline with 50 aircraft of a given type. Boeing and Atlas Air take serviceability of these 4 airframes extremely seriously. The Airbus equivalent of the Dreamlifter is the Beluga. Airbus built the original A300-600 supertransporter, known informally as the Beluga for obvious visual reasons, starting in the 1990s to move Airbus components between its own manufacturing facilities. Airbus later developed the Beluga XL based on the A330 to handle larger Airbus A350 components. Both Airbus designs serve the same fundamental purpose as the Dreamlifter, moving oversized aircraft structures between distributed manufacturing sites. The Airbus and Boeing solutions are not interchangeable. They were each built around the specific structural dimensions of the aircraft they support, but together, they represent something interesting. 2 of the world's largest aircraft manufacturers independently arriving at the same conclusion. The future of commercial aircraft manufacturing requires aircraft specifically designed to support the supply chain infrastructure that flies. That framing is worth sitting with for a moment because it reframes how you look at the Dreamlifter's range question. 4,200 nautical miles is not the limit of what this aircraft can do. It is the limit of what it needs to do on a single segment, balanced against payload requirements and operational margins. The routes Boeing flies with these aircraft are established, refined, and optimized over years of operation. The Anchorage fuel stop on the Trans-Pacific routing is not a failure of range. It is smart mission planning that keeps margin in the bank where it belongs. The Dreamlifter entered service in 2010. In the years since, it has accumulated an operational record that speaks for itself. The 787 is now one of the most commercially successful widebody jets in history, with hundreds in service worldwide and hundreds more on order. Every one of those aircraft was assembled from components that arrived via Dreamlifter. The 4 aircraft with that bloated, unmistakable fuselage have been quietly threading the global supply chain together, flight after flight after flight. If you want to see one in person, Payne Field is your best opportunity. The flight tracking community maintains active feeds on Dreamlifter movements, search by tail number, and you will find enthusiast communities that track these aircraft the way some people track rare birds, which, with only 4 of them in the world, is not an inaccurate comparison. For more on this and other aviation coverage, find us at radiohanger.com. Sources for today's segment include Simple Flying and publicly available Boeing technical documentation. I'm Tower. Stay ahead of the weather, fly the whole envelope, and I'll see you next time.